once again to the nightmare called AmericanExpose.com. Yes, I call it a nightmare because what are we dealing with? Well, right now we're dealing with eco-terrorism, listeners. I'm convinced, totally convinced. And as I look at the paper, I look at today's paper, a hurricane is coming. Well, gee, and yesterday, storm lingers in Mexico, front page news in the Oklahoman. This hurricane is gaining intensity now as it's moving up the East Coast. Wilma. I've seen many dissertations about Wilma and theories. And it's just waking a whole lot of people up to eco-terrorism. A whole lot of people are very aware of eco-terrorism. Today is UN Day. I had no idea we were going to have Joan Vion on today. It just kind of happened. We're going to have her, well, we'll phone her at the first commercial pause here, as I was a little late in getting up here to the office. But listeners, we have a mess in place, a created scenario that's going on a daily basis. It's called eco-terrorism. And Secretary of Defense Cohen made that statement way back on April 28, 1997. That's the best definitive documentation you can have, listeners. Others are engaging even in an eco type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes, remotely, through the use of electromagnetic waves. So there are plenty of ingenious minds out there at work finding ways in which they can wreak terror upon other nations. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts, and that's why this is so important. I always seem to have to take it to the Security Council of the UN system, because here it is, a very secretive group meeting behind closed doors, of which our government is a part to. Our government at the top has been corrupt for decades. The impeachment of President Bush is just going to put another one in there to do the work for the UN system and the State Department. We have information regarding this situation with the State Department and where they are with their thoughts about what's going on. And United Nations at 60 from the U.S. State Department is very, very important information. Dennis has done tremendous work. I was up late last night, was able to see what he's put up for today, and much in research on the United Nations, as so appropriate it should be. Here it is, the 60th anniversary right now, right today. Is the press covering any of this? Well, they're doing this for a reason. The United Nations is not very popular with the American people, and that is exactly the way it should be. And how do we regain the control and structure of our country? Education, knowledge, numbers. Education, knowledge, numbers. That's what it is, listeners. It takes you and me together and everyone else associated with this network and other networks to come together to understand the big picture in place. Totalitarian command and control on us all. And sustainable communities are being built. Manipulative directions with the religions are being done. Our militaries, the global cop for the UN system, it's not Bush's military, it's the IMF's military, listeners, the International Monetary Fund. There's where the funding comes from, there's where the control is, there's where the Secretary of Treasury is, the U.S. Governor of the IMF. We will phone Joan Vion momentarily, listeners, and have her up for just this hour, as that's all she wants to be on for. I can't control that. Stay with us, we'll be right back. Listeners, I'm here at the website of Joan Vion. It's not pleasant, just like my website. Joan, welcome to the broadcast.
Chris Gerner, hello.
A pleasure to have you.
A pleasure to be on your show, Chris.
Well,
you're a long-time activist. You've been hanging in. You've been through thick and thin.
That's
too sick and thing. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're still there.
It's so
God
frustrating.
Bless you.
Thank
yeah,
you,
it's very, it's very depressing. It's very frustrating. And what is even more disgusting is the American people are out to lunch.
Well, I'm sure there's more waking up, but I think, as Secretary of Defense called it, eco-terrorism, I think we need your read on eco-terrorism. You conveyed to me a situation in Beirut for you at one time. But here we have Wilma moving up the East Coast, creating more damage, as we've had Katrina and Rita. What are your feelings about all that's going on with the weather?
Well, I've just written an extensive newsletter for people who are interested. It's been a while since I've been on your show, Chris. I'm sure I'm not unknown to some listeners, but let me just say that I'm a businesswoman. I have Vion Financial Services. I manage money. I give financial advice for a fee. And as such, I went to a UN conference 11 years ago in Cairo, which was on reducing the population. And I got my wake-up call there, and I saw world government to my shock and my horror, because nobody was talking about it. Nobody was calling it what it was. A world governmental system. You can call it the New World Order, but that really does not explain to most people what is happening. And so I started covering global meetings, and to date I have covered 71 global meetings around the world. I have been in the face of a lot of major people, major movers and shakers, and global global decision makers. Some of them know my face. They may not know my name, but they know my face because I'm usually at as many key conferences as I can be at. And therefore, you know, it takes money. And I write newsletters, and I offer newsletters for subscription. I have an economic newsletter in which it comes out quarterly, and it's all about the global economic structure that we are in and how it affects our money. The other one is a newsletter on the geopolitics. It's called UN Watch. For 7 years, I've written it every other month. I'm now changing that as of the first of the year. It will be written 4 times a year. It'll be a substantial newsletter, but I just can't write it every other month. I've become a slave. I have no life other than constantly research and writing in between trips and taking care of clients. And so anyway, the most recent newsletter that I have written for UN Watch, it's a 3-month issue, meaning it covers 6 months because I was a little behind and now I'm ahead. And it's on Katrina. And it's available for $18. People can call 301-371-0541. 301-371-0541. They can request an information packet. We'd be more than happy to send it out. The economic newsletter is $48 a year, $12 an issue. And it's very well researched. The most recent economic newsletter was the June issue, which was issued in August, and it's entitled Moving the World Towards a Global Tax and a Global Currency. I've been there. I've seen it. I've asked the right questions. We are in world government. It's not coming. There are many preachers out there who say that it's coming. It's not coming. It's here. And in any event, the bottom line is that these are things that I've researched, and these are the materials that I have. They'll help people wake up their neighbors, their friends, their loved ones. The bottom line is knowledge is power, and if you understand the day and the hour, you can pray more effectively, you can act more effectively, you can prepare more effectively, and you can stand in the gap, which is our God-given mandate. Because if you have no idea what's going on, you'll just be like everybody else out in La La Land.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. And it would be my privilege to give you airtime if you want, anytime. You can take my show anytime you want to get your feelings to the listeners. You've done more work for all of us than anyone I know as far as this UN system. And the UN system is everywhere in America. People don't realize it. NASCAR even has a United Way car. Did you know that? The stock cars?
Mm-hmm.
The stock car racing? They have a United Way car for Katrina relief. It's so everywhere. The World Series, you see United Way on the backboard.
Well, United Way is right in the middle of the whole globalist agenda. And you really have to look at whether it's the United Way or whether it's the American Red Cross, whether or not the money's getting to the people, because the Red Cross, for sure, has certainly been in a number of schemes in which people get, "I'm sorry this happened to you" letters without the money enclosed, because the Red Cross needs it for their operating expenses.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh. So here we are with UN in America, and this is United Nations Day. There's plenty of information about that on our website that Dennis has proposed for us. But here we are in the middle of this next storm. What are your feelings about these weather anomalies?
Well, I believe they're man-made. And I think there's plenty of evidence out there. There's been a lot of research over a number of years. I remember last year I wrote a major newsletter on China and the South Seas disaster. And just as I was getting ready to mail it, a friend of mine from New Zealand sends me a package of information, and in it he has photographs of a buddy of his who was a tsunami test bomber pilot back in the 70s. And he told my friend that he was testing tsunami bombs, which was a joint project by the British and the American, to create tsunamis. And, you know, he was dropping them from planes. And, you know, then they would go and do, you know, explode in the ocean and create a tsunami. And they were doing this from, at the time, it was a top secret base called the Garcia Diego in South Seas. And, you know, so they were doing tsunami bombs back in the 70s. And, of course, most people know about the HAARP and the low electromagnetic frequency waves that they have been able to perfect. And there is more than enough information to show that these hurricanes, et cetera, have either been embellished or they've been created. You know, my newsletter goes into the whole agenda here. It's just amazing. Look, a week before the first hurricane hit, Katrina, Alan Greenspan gave a farewell speech at the Federal Reserve, the annual Federal Reserve meeting out in Wyoming, and he basically said, "Hey, look, America's got to change her ways. They've got to start saving. We can't go on like this. We have a bubble in housing. You know, we've got to do something." Well, voila, Katrina. You know, it hit right. You know, if you had a common denominator to really slow the American economy or the global economy, does both, and you had a common denominator that would make Americans stop spending, especially using credit, it would basically be energy. You increase the price of energy, you increase the cost of everything exponentially, the price of all goods, because now it costs more to transport, plastics, medication, transportation period, whether you need to go to work or whatever. You have Americans, look at this, they're in the mouth of the lion or the mouth of the dragon, if you will. You know, they've bit off a whole lot. They've got debt up to their eyeballs. They all have the SUVs. You know, there are people who've just bought $40,000-$50,000 SUVs that are only going to get maybe $18,000 in a trade-in. Okay, why? Because all of a sudden, the gas guzzlers are out. Now, hello, we've been there, done that. Remember the 70s?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I mean, a year ago, over a year ago, I wrote an economic newsletter called Does the Return to the 70s Equal the Death of the Dollar? All my clients were well-positioned to benefit, unfortunately, but they benefited by where the market is.
Joan Vianna is our guest.
The weather.
We'll continue with Joan Vianna on the other side. Listeners, vital information. It's thewomensgroup.org. That's the website. It's the partner website's ours, thewomensgroup.org. Stay with us. We will return. Joan Vianna is our guest for this hour. Joan, do you know of a Ben Bernanke?
Yeah, Ben Bernanke.
Okay.
He was just named the Federal Reserve Chairman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the beat goes on, a new one. Ben Bernanke?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ben Bernanke is supposedly the most conservative. I would have to say to you that for a number of years I have been impressed with him with regard to, with regard to what he has said, but I don't, we'll have to see. I'm not saying that he's not going to be an Alan Greenspan. He is. He is going to head up the private corporation that manages the monetary system of the United States. This private corporation creates the highs and the lows in the stock market. It creates the business cycle, and basically it dictates to the U.S. government what they will do and what they won't do.
How does this situation with these weather anomalies fit into the Federal Reserve System at this point?
Oh, fits in very well. Fits in very well. I have written extensively on something called creative destruction. And creative destruction was a economic philosophy that was first made public by, I'm looking in my newsletter, the name just escapes me at this very moment, but how could I forget his name? Anyway, it was, I'll get it in a second, and creative destruction, Joseph Schumpeter, in his book, Capitalism, Socialism, and Democracy, published in 1942.
Mm.
And basically, I'm just going to summarize what he basically said. He basically said that sometimes you have to destroy in order to recreate, in order to stimulate the economy.
Mm.
And I had written a newsletter called Pac-Man Capitalism, because I call it Pac-Man Capitalism, not realizing that there was something like that by Joseph Schumpeter. And I happen to be telling a friend of mine, he's a little bit smarter than I am, about Pac-Man Capitalism. He said, oh, you're describing Joseph Schumpeter. I said, who?
Uh-huh.
And you see, the bottom line is capitalism is an ism, like communism, socialism, Marxism, it is an ism. It has a life and a dynamics all of its own. And as such, capitalism needs new markets, new buyers, new products constantly, continuously and constantly. And so when you take a look at world government and you take a look at sustainable development, and you take a look at public-private partnership, all right? What's happening down in New Orleans is like, you know, made to order. Made to order. So if you think New Orleans is going to be rebuilt like any other American city that we know of, guess again. Because they will use sustainable development, sustainable cities, public-private partnership, and regional government, which is a complete change. It's appointed government, not elected government. And that's what you can bet is going to happen when they, quote-unquote, rebuild the South.
Now, in your book regarding the Biodiversity Treaty, you state that the treaty will move human beings by 2025 into protected islands in which they will not be able to get out of or move from. That's only 20 years from now.
Well, you know, when I wrote some of the things I wrote when I wrote that book, which was about 5 years ago, I wasn't as sure as I am now. And I would have to say that it's all called control. Sustainable development does mean control. It means control of the resources, and you and I are resources. You know, this right to die with dignity stuff, this euthanasia. What does sustainable development basically say? Sustainable development says that if you don't produce, you cannot consume. Okay? You have to consume, produce in order to consume. That's your ticket. And babies and elderly people, for the most part, do not produce. Of course, babies can't until they get to, good grief, if you want child slave labor, you can start at maybe 8 or 9 or 10, like they did in feudalistic England and Europe. But for the most part, sustainable development says, you know, you have to earn your right to eat. Because after all, the Earth's resources don't belong to us. Nor do they belong to God, you know? The United Nations is now the caretaker.
There it is. The UN system, listeners. We'll be back with Joan Vian to continue on the other side. TheWomen'sGroup.org is the website. Concentrate on her direction, listeners, and support her direction to encourage her to continue. Stay with us. We'll be right back. TheWomen'sGroup.org is the website for Joan Vian. Joan, I think back in 1995, the war with Bosnia-Herzegovina, and then I think back in the war with Yugoslavia, which brought out Kosovo, and it was Yugoslavia was divided up into three countries, I believe. But do you have any examples of potential sustainable communities that have been set up from the past around the world somewhere?
Well, yes, there. In fact, I was just on the internet yesterday, and it's very interesting what Canada is doing with regard to sustainable cities. There are several books on sustainable cities, but the example that I give that the example that I give is Beirut, Lebanon. Back in the 70s, I was traveling from Israel to Rome. And we had a stopover in Beirut, and I was just fascinated with the beauty of the city and how it sparkled in the Mediterranean there. It was absolutely beautiful. Reminded me of Chicago. Very sophisticated. And, well, you know, they've had the war in Lebanon, and Beirut was totaled. Well, when I was at the United Nations Conference on Habitat 2 in Istanbul in 1996, they had a best practices conference or display, and it was in a building all of its own in all the various countries, had different projects on sustainable development and best practices, you know, what works best, in other words. And as I was walking around it, there was a model city of Beirut. And so I talked to the guy, and I said, what is this? He said, oh, this is the new Beirut. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, we were destroyed. I said, yes. He said, we have rebuilt it using sustainable development. And I said, and I was just learning about public-private partnership. And I asked him about, did it have any public-private partnership? He said, oh, yeah, the whole city is public-private partnership.
Hmm.
And see, so, you know, they unveiled public-private partnership in Istanbul. That was where they unveiled it, and the UN tied it together. Before that, you would never see public-private partnership in any UN document, and that was 1996. And so, you know, they, way before it ever hit a document, they had been busy experimenting. So, you know, I believe that just like I know that just like you know, Beirut has been reestablished by public-private partnership, that's what we're going to see down in New Orleans and any other city that has problems.
And certainly now Florida. At times when I do shows, I monitor some of these stations and with the sound off, and certainly see what's going on as a result of Wilma now,
mm-hmm.
Flooded areas, flooded out areas, and destroyed homes. And so once again, a public-private partnership is the melding of federal government, corporations, and non-governmental organizations?
Yes. It's basically fascism. It's where government is bought out by corporations. They have the money. Governments are all broke. And they go into business, a partnership, with the idea of a profit. And they, you know, what is happening is sewers, electricity, water, you know, all of the major infrastructures are being converted to public-private partnership.
With that scenario in place here, what do you recommend that people do to awaken their sleeping brethren to this?
Well, that's an excellent question, Chris. Because first of all, public-private partnership is a very difficult thing for people to understand. So they first have to understand what a public-private partnership is to begin with, and then they need to put together a proposal, I believe, for the people at the local level, county level, state level, whichever level they're concerned about, you know. Now, first, how are they going to understand whether or not there are any public-private partnerships in their area? Well, they're going to read the newspaper, and let's assume they're working on a toll road or something. They want to find out, all they have to do is look for three levels of organizations. The county, state, city level of government, corporations, if a corporation is tied with the government, and then usually there'll also be a non-governmental organization of some kind. And or it'll say innovative or unique or tax alternative, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They have all kinds of ways of covering up what it really is. But they need to get involved. They need to go down to some of the meetings that are being held at the county council meeting or at the state level. They need to start paying attention to what their government is doing. That's the only way that they're going to, you know, you have to get your hands dirty in order to figure out what's happening.
And there is the problem. Now, we're dealing with taxes, and the UN wants a tax. Are they getting a tax now from the American people?
I'm sorry, which tax? A UN tax?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they are. Now, talking about a global tax is a different issue. So what do we have with regard to global taxation? My economic newsletter on a global tax and a global currency will go into that in detail. But let me say that at the last United Nations General Assembly meeting in New York City, which was 6 weeks ago, the first week in September, the kings, the princes, presidents, and prime ministers did agree to allowing or giving countries the opportunity to put a $10 to $20 tax on airline tickets. And this money would be collected by the airlines. It would be passed on to the country, I guess the country that the airline is in. And then I'm assuming the airline will get some kind of, cut off the top for their trouble.
And participation.
And participation. And then it'll go to the country, and the country will determine what they will do with those extra money. The idea being that they will put those money towards helping the United Nations meet the Millennium Development Goals, which is to basically reduce poverty by 50% by 2010, in another 2015, in another 10 years, and reduce HIV/AIDS and give every young child a basic primary education,
mm-hmm.
among other things.
Isn't that interesting? The Oklahoma talks about the educational system, one of the fourth graders are very deficient. 40% of the fourth graders are very deficient in their education here in Oklahoma. Quite remarkable. And then I see Jesse Helms speaking in the year 2000. He was chairman of the U.S. Senate Committee on Foreign Relations before the United Nations Security Council. He says, the last year, the American people contributed a total of more than $1.4 billion to the U.N. system in assessments and voluntary contributions. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Where's this money coming from? But that's the question we all ask ourselves at this juncture.
Mm-hmm.
And if we stop funding the U.N. system, the U.N. system dies, which tells me the U.N. system's from America.
Well, we control it. Without the United States, we've developed it. We've created it. We've manicured it, so to speak. Without the U.S., without our money, without our power, there would be no U.N. And I think that's what most people need to understand. The U.N. is not a product of its own. It is a product of a small cadre of people working together and countries. And primarily the two countries were Britain and the United States.
And still are.
Yes. We need to understand that. And on that note, I would highly recommend that people buy my book, Prince Charles, The Sustainable Prince. That book is $14, which includes $2 for shipping and handling. And they can get that book by calling 301-371-0541. 301-371-0541. That will give them the whole history of the UN, the role of the British royal family in global affairs, and the role of Prince Charles.
Vital to do this, listeners, they're handbooks for the New World Order. They are, where are you going to learn from but the person that's done all the work and the legwork, which you're the only one that's done all the legwork for our country that I can see, that's most paramount to be concerned about, the UN system, and that's all I've ever been talking about since I've been on the air, basically. Everything interconnects to the State Department and the UN system. The State Department has the U.S. mission to the United Nations. And Condoleezza Rice, she's been being groomed for something.
I think they're going to run her against Hillary.
Against or with?
Well, you never know anymore. You know, bipartisanship, a Republican and a Democrat, that's also been, touted for a little while.
Uh-huh.
The fact that at some point in time we could have a Democratic president and a Republican vice president or something like that.
Well, it's all very distressing to us that as here we are in 2005, it wasn't as distressing 10 years ago, but here it is. We're in this sustainable development that we don't even really know what sustainable development means. And how does sustainable development pertain to private property rights, Joan?
Sustainable development, in my opinion, means highest and best use. highest and best use. In other words, we as individuals, what is our highest and best use? In order to have our highest and best use, you have maximum production. And in order to have maximum production, you have to take care of your body. You have to have good health. You have to have a good environment. You have to have good food. You have to have good education. And therefore, when you start using that phrase, highest and best use, and adopting it, then what that means is personal property rights can be breached because, like we saw with, I want to say Cody versus, it's not Cody, it's
Kilo.
Kilo.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, versus New England. Very simply is that your property can be taken if there's a higher and better use.
And then you have something called empowerment zones. I just received a mailing about empowerment zones. I don't know whether you're aware of them or not. Are you?
I am. I am, Chris.
Good.
And empowerment zones, that's all part and parcel of regional government. It's all part and parcel of the federal government now creating special zones for economic development. And therefore, as such, it really bypasses local, county, and state government by way of being under their jurisdiction because it comes under regional government. Is that not correct?
Yes.
So, you know, when you start creating empowerment zones all over the country, what you're doing is something very similar to the United Nations Biodiversity Treaty, which says, you know, you can't build here, this is going to be a park and nobody can live here. You're doing the very same thing, except you're doing it to change the structure of government.
Uh-huh. I see something from Smart Communities Network, and they're talking about sustainable transportation. What does that mean in your mind, sustainable transportation from the...
It means everybody out of the car and everybody into the bike or the carpooling or the mass transit, rapid transit.
And do you think this is the reason for the high price of gasoline? Has it come down again, but it will go up again?
Yeah, it's just all they did, they're skimming off the top by way of the highest price right now in the stock market. Chris, I have a favor to ask you.
Sure.
I need to go unexpectedly.
Okay.
And so I'm really sorry, but I need to leave.
I understand. And give out that phone number, 301-371-0541.
That's correct.
301-371-0541. Thank you for your presence,
Thank
Joan.
Thank you. God bless you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And there you have it. Listeners, people are getting tired of doing this. Henry Lamb just turned me down for an interview. He's going to be busy till the end of the year. So I do see these directions where other people have to pick up, where people like Joan Vion and Henry Lamb are, and Karen Lee Bixman, another example, she dropped out. Other people have to pick up the ball and run with it. And it's just the way it is. And I'm sorry, but we have so many things going on and so few people to work with. This is vital, totally vital, that we come back to getting more people involved in helping to wake up our country. And other people have to go to these meetings and connect these dots like Joan has done. Without that help, without those people getting involved to help us, I don't see any hope. I'm sorry to say. And, you know, Karen Lee Bixman was vital. She has a great dissertation about the Global Fire Monitoring Center. It's on page 2 of our website. Dennis redid it, so it was easier to read and comprehend. Dennis is vital to the website. You know, he does this ongoing with his staff that are wearing out. So this is the problem. There's just not enough to get the information out. Not enough people that want to be concerned. Well, if you aren't going to be concerned about what's going on with the weather wars, I don't know what to say, because this has to be exposed. This ability to move hurricanes where they could be moved out of harm's way, which is the reason why they were created to begin with. In other words, the ability to move hurricanes was for a good purpose, to move them out of harm's way. So that's what the inventors said. but it's being used against us. It's being used against other countries. I did not get a chance to ask Joan Vian about the earthquake in Pakistan. But I just, you know, I can't twist people's arms to come on the air. As I said, Henry Lamb dropped. He's not going to come on. He's too busy. Well, how busy are people to be to not come on to talk to a whole lot of people? This is what concerns me. How are you going to get the word out when you're an expert on the subject unless you talk on the radio? Unless you put the information out to a lot of people to motivate them to get active. We'll be back to continue the broadcast. Stay with me. Broadcast. Let's consider this. If you respond to Joan Vian in her directions, she'll come back. She'll come back on the air. She's very upset about not receiving enough response on any of her interviews, on any of the broadcasts she's been on. That's where she is. So the number is 301-371-0541. Flood her with phone calls and find out about ordering the newsletters. The economic newsletter is $40 a year. Well, that's not a lot of money when you consider the work that she's done. It's not a lot of money. And we're going to have to do this. We're going to have to all go on, get on board on this and do the best we can to support her and encourage her to continue. Let's go take a phone call. John in Michigan, welcome to the broadcast, John.
Good morning, Chris. I mean, good afternoon, Chris.
Thanks for the warning, John.
Okay, you're right about Joan Vian. I've been following her for years, and she is fabulous. I've spread her. Agenda 21 is up here in northern Michigan, and with her information, we've been able to knock it down. She's a lovely person, and just was great to hear her on your show. And when you brought up the education issue, I mentioned my brother up here did a lot of exposure in the mid-90s on education, and you wanted to know who you could get to expose what's happening in the system. And all of his resources, I didn't mention Sam Blumenfeld, but he's probably still out there, but they have given up their run. And the only one left, he said, was Charlotte Isserby. And you probably had Charlotte on.
Well, we can bring her back. But, yes, we have had her on many times, but not lately. So we'll bring her back.
She is probably the most well-versed, being the fact that she was a governmental employee and got their programs. She was in charge of program and policies.
And her Deliberate Dumbing Down book is very, very well done with documentation.
Well, it's also a website, deliberatedumbingdown.com or .org, one of them.
.com, which is a partner site to our site as well.
Oh, okay. Well, I use your site all the time. We have a weekly or daily five-minute program here in our major talk show out of Traverse City.
Uh-huh.
It's called Graffiti, where people can call in with one-sentence statements. And it can be a long sentence, but I put American Exposé out there along with Infowars.com, RBN Live, every single day. And if people can go to their major country show or talk show and have them do this, and so that they have an opportunity to not be censored and get it out there, it's worked wonders up here because people are talking chemtrails now and weather modification, Agenda 21, and it's all through that just little five-minute blip he has every day for one-sentence statements. And also in the school system, my brother up here, his daughter was homeschooled until this year, and I think she's in seventh grade, They get a test they have to do every Friday, and this is a psychological testing that the parents have no clue of what's going on.
Ouch.
And they put all these questions out on this sheet of paper regarding personality and what you would do in a situation like this. It has nothing to do with knowledge base. issues. And he's working on that right now to get that exposed. But parents should be very aware that these things are going on without even any presentation or knowledge to the parent, and should ask the child if they've gotten any of these little secret tests that don't deal with their curriculum that they're involved in. It's how they're profiling these children, and they can profile the family through what the children does with their answers.
Uh-huh. So, do you want to hold over?
Sure, I will, Chris.
Okay, let's hold over with John. Jeff has a presentation to make, and we'll hold him over until the other commercial pause is completed, and then we'll have Barney and Marilyn. Stay with us, listeners. We'll be right back for the second hour.